Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of the Little Dudes Insect Academy podcast. I just wanted to come on here right before the episode started and make a little bit of an announcement to you all. Yeah, so this week we're back with another episode, but before we get to it, I wanted to go over a few things. So first of all, if you're new to the show, Little Dudes Insect Academy is an organization that I created. I'm Brayden. Nice to meet you if you haven't been here before, but yeah, so Little Dudes, I created, I'm super into insects, always have been, and I believe that the world will be and can be a better place if we have more people who study bugs, because everything that we do every single day, where it comes from our food to our medications, the medical industry, it is all heavily influenced by insects and the world of entomology. So the whole goal of Little Dudes Insect Academy is to create more entomologists. So that's what we're here for. I talk with entomologists on the show that you're about to see here shortly. But the way we're able to do this and make this happen is we are a nonprofit foundation. So if you're interested in contributing to this goal that we have of creating more entomologists and getting the world out there about entomology, visit our website. There's more information about us there and about myself as well. And consider making a donation as well. So if you donate, that really helps us out a lot. It makes this show possible. And you're really contributing to the future of science and entomology and making more scientists. So it's really exciting. You can do that through our website through a one-time gift. Or the best way to support us would be through our Patreon, which is a monthly subscription, which is cancelable anytime. But yeah, it's a monthly recurring donation that really helps us out, pay our bills, keep us running. And also we have some really cool, like, exclusive posts and benefits for you there. So you'll get the podcast episode a day early every week. And for some of the higher levels, you'll get your name at the end of some of the YouTube videos. So if you're interested in supporting the show and keeping it going and contributing to the future of science, definitely head over to our website, check out our Patreon. The links to that will be in the show notes, and if you're on YouTube, it'll be in the description of this episode. But without further ado, let's get back to this episode. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of the Little Dudes Insect Academy podcast. I'm here in Washington, D.C. at the ESA conference this year, and I'm sitting across from the table with my new friend, Peter. Welcome to the show, Peter. I'm so excited to have you. Go ahead and introduce yourself for us.
Yeah, so thank you for having me. I've never been on a podcast before. I'm excited.
Nice.
My name is Peter Kahn. I love bugs. I love insects. I'm currently studying a group of flies. It's called a sarcophagid. It's the family. It's flesh flies, so
nice.
Things you would find on roadkill, that kind of thing. But that's sort of unpleasant. Thankfully, the kind of flies that I am really focused on,
yeah,
don't live on roadkill, rotting stuff. They have a relationship with a certain kind of carnivorous plant, a pitcher plant. So, you know, you have the standard fly traps that everybody knows about, the Venus fly trap,
right,
those jaws that snap shut.
Yeah.
A pitcher plant is taller, thinner. It's kind of like a big pit that things fall into,
yeah,
and they get stuck and the plant eats them.
Yeah.
These flies, they actually drop their babies directly down into those traps.
Mm.
But there's all these other kind of dead things in there that the babies like to eat. And so it's kind of like a little nursery for them. So they have this space that's very dangerous for most other insects, but that's where they live. It's kind of like a clownfish in a sea anemone sort of deal.
Right. Yeah. So the pitcher plant has this like digestive liquid, right? And so what do they, you know, how does the fly larvae, how do they not die? Like, how do they not get consumed?
That's an excellent, excellent question.
Yeah.
So the idea is that as a group, as a family, mm-hmm, these flies live in pretty caustic, pretty harsh places. So even think about roadkill, which I don't like to think about roadkill. It's gross. But if you,
yeah,
do, yeah, there are flies, there are fly larvae, maggots on the roadkill, but there's also lots of other things breaking that animal down, decomposing it, returning it to the environment. So,
right,
lots of bacteria, other things. And because there's so many decomposers around, there's other harsh digestive chemicals in those environments.
Mm-hmm.
So these flies in general, when they're larvae, they have a thick skin. Their skin is called a cuticle. Mm-hmm. And so not only is it thick, and the thickness protects them against, you know, digestive things, acid, whatever. Mm. But some also have chemicals of their own in their skin that help counteract. So kind of like when your stomach's upset, you take a Tums or an antacid, and it helps reduce the acidity of your stomach. They kind of, some of them have that built into their own skin to help.
Wow.
So they have a physical protection and a chemical protection. And we think that those same traits that help flies in this family in general are helping the pitcher plant flies inside of the mouth, if you will, of a carnivorous plant.
Wow. Yeah, that is so crazy. And we'll jump back into that in just a minute. But first, let's talk about a little bit of your education and your schooling. Where did you go for all of that, and where are you in that process?
So I did my undergrad at Duke University, and I was a biology major. So mm-hmm. I've always liked nature. I've always loved nature and have wanted to learn as much about it as possible.
But right.
Maybe unlike other researchers, mm-hmm. I didn't have undergraduate research experience. I didn't know that's what I wanted to do. I was also an econ minor and an Italian minor. So
okay.
I didn't yet know exactly that I wanted to go into research and academia. That was only something that I kind of realized afterwards. And so I did my undergrad at Duke, and then I worked in a lab at the University of Pittsburgh, which was very different from anything that I was used to. You know, I'm very interested in natural systems and nature. That was a lab that was looking at opioids and opioid tolerance using rats as a model.
Right.
So much more medical focused.
Yeah.
But it got me experience in a lab doing research, conducting experiments, and just kind of interacting with people in that world.
Yeah.
And that helped me just get experience and get in the door elsewhere. So I did my master's degree then after that at East Carolina University in Greenville, North Carolina, with my advisor, Dr. Tripp Lamb. And that's where we started this research about the flies and the carnivorous plants, looking at the evolutionary relationship between the two. And then I worked in a lab in Florida where, again, kind of a different topic. We were looking at harmful algal blooms that are really a huge problem down there.
Yeah.
And looking at natural chemicals that can help protect you against those toxins.
Mm-hmm.
And so now I'm in the process of looking for a PhD position to study plant-insect interactions and the evolution of those relationships in general, but hopefully to continue working in this carnivorous plant-insect community.
Wow. Yeah. So, let's dive into a little bit more of what you've been doing right now. These pitcher plants aren't native to the States, right? So you have to travel, is that correct?
So there are two major kinds of pitcher plants, two different things that are not, I mean, they're not closely related to one another,
right?
But they have independently evolved a similar way of catching and eating insects. So this is an example, you know, of what we call convergent evolution.
Right.
Two different organisms end up doing the same thing. They're the old world pitcher plants, which live in Indonesia, Southeast Asia. They're also called monkey pots, but the genus is Nepenthes, which is a fantastic word that I love.
Yeah.
And they tend to be more arboreal things. Not all, but a lot of them. They grow like orchids on trees.
Oh, wow.
And their pitchers hang down from the tips of their leaves.
Oh, cool.
And they tend to be a bit more caustic of an environment. They produce more of their own digestive enzymes. The pitcher plants that are native to North America are a different genus, the genus Sarracenia, also a great word.
Yeah.
And they, instead of hanging down from trees, they grow on the ground.
Okay.
So they grow in bogs, pine savannas, areas that have a lot of water and a lot of light, but have specific water conditions. It's kind of acidic. Lots of other plants can't grow there.
Mm.
Only, you know, specialized things tend to grow there.
Okay.
They grow up from the ground. And so they're found, they're here in Virginia.
Mm.
They actually grow all along the east coast of the United States and the Gulf Coast. And one species gets all the way up into Canada.
Really? I did not know that. Yeah, I thought they were mostly in South America and, you know, Central America.
So there is in this family, there are three genera.
Right.
Sarracenia is one that lives over here.
Mm-hmm.
There's Darlingtonia, which only has one species, the cobra lily. Their head rears up. They even have a little forked tongue coming out. Those live in the mountains of California. And then Heliamphora, which is, I think it's a great name. It means like the sun pot or the sun pitcher. They grow in South America on the tepuis, the big flat top mountains, very
nice.
Kind of otherworldly environment.
Yeah.
But there is a lot of diversity right around here. There are between 8 and 11 species that live on the east coast of the U.S., depending on how you define, you know, what a species is in that group.
So the ones you study specifically are the ones on the east coast, is that correct?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. So have you traveled to go and see some of the other ones at all? Or
I would love to. I would love to. So I've been lucky to, through the course of my master's degree,
mm-hmm.
and then a few times since then as the study kind of continues, I've had the opportunity to visit all of the different Sarracenia species, so all along the Gulf Coast, all along the East Coast, because, you know, the some more southern ones, so they each have their own ranges.
Right.
Louisiana has its own, Alabama has its own.
Yeah.
I'd love to go visit some of the other ones, though. And they have their own flies that live in them, which is another independent convergent.
They're separate species
thing.
Also.
Yes.
Wow. That is fascinating. Yeah. So, yeah, wow. So what have you been finding recently with this study? Like, how can this apply to us, and why is this important research to do?
That's always the big question.
Yeah.
So part of
other than it just being really cool.
Right, which I think, as anybody will tell you, that's the main reason they tend to get into stuff.
Yeah.
But pitcher plants, unfortunately, because of the specific habitat that they live in,
mm-hmm.
they're threatened. A lot of them are endangered because they live in these big, flat, open areas that, you know, if you are a developer, you see this big open area without a lot of trees, you think, I can put a building there. I can do something.
Right.
So there's a lot of habitat loss that way. The other thing is, this is also a big problem on the West Coast, there's been a history of fire suppression in certain areas, right? We don't want forest fires because we see them as destructive.
Yeah.
But they're a natural part of these habitats.
I completely agree, yeah.
And that's part of the way that these bogs, it's the fires that move through them help prevent other plants from taking over and kind of crowding out the carnivorous plants. The fire comes in, gets rid of things that aren't used to it, but the carnivorous plants like fire. They grow back and they look beautiful.
Makes an open space.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. Clears away the other stuff so they can get all the light that they need. They love light.
Yeah.
So a couple, and there's more factors than that. Poaching have resulted in these plants being very rare.
Mm.
And when we think about habitat reintroductions, you know, we think about making sure it's a clean, natural environment and introducing the plants back to where they historically were.
Yeah.
What we want to incorporate into that is this whole community of insects that lives with them, not mm-hmm. only because if you're a fly that only lives in a pitcher plant and the pitcher plant is rare, you are probably
also
rare. You
don't have a place to reproduce.
Right,
yeah.
So we want to introduce them. Also, it's been shown in some studies, and I think this requires further study as well, but these insects, some of them benefit the pitcher plant.
Mm.
So if you think about, I said the Nepenthes, the old world pitcher plants, have these strong digestive enzymes that break things down. The new world ones that live in the U.S. don't as much. They more rely on bacteria and other things to break down their prey for them, and then they kind of take in whatever is released.
So even more relationship between organisms.
Right,
wow.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so the thought is that these fly larvae are in there. They're eating the dead insects. they're, you know, when you eat, what goes in must come out.
Right.
But that also is, you know, released into the pitcher plant and, you know, what is plant fertilizer, but, you know, manure and all that kind of stuff. So
yeah.
In a nutshell, they help release these nutrients. They may speed up the digestion, make more nutrients available for the plant.
Mm-hmm.
And when you go and look at them, and depending on the bog, the vast majority of the pitcher traps have a larva in them. So it's something that they've evolved alongside. And though it's not necessary, it may be helpful, a helpful presence to the plant. So in order, if we want to restore the whole habitat, we need to restore all aspects of it.
Yeah, wow. Yeah, so many interactions between these two things. Yeah, so... yeah, so that's really awesome. I think it's really important research and really bizarre. I actually didn't know that pitcher plants were in North America, so that's really cool, yeah. Yeah, so moving on to, like, how did you talked about this a little bit previously, but how did you, like, rule down entomology to be your path? Like, was there a moment, or was it kind of gradual, like, yeah, entomology is what I want to do, or how did that kind of come about?
So that's a good question. I think I've always been interested in invertebrates in general,
okay.
Right? Yeah. You watch, so I've always loved nature documentaries and things too.
Right, yeah.
And not that there's anything at all wrong with lions and tigers and wolves and bears, but they're in every documentary, right? You always got to see the lions. You always have to see the polar bears. And they have incredible footage and there's great things to learn about them.
Yeah.
But I think the invertebrates are often neglected, even though they make up the vast majority of life, you know, out there. They tend to be neglected. And so, but because of that, it was sort of a, they're kind of mysterious and unknown.
Yeah.
They tend to be a lot more diverse and kind of crazy.
So unique, yeah.
Yes, exactly. In their life strategies and their relationship with other organisms. So I just loved how wild things could get.
Yeah.
And two of the people who really helped instill that in me was a naturalist in Georgia named Stacia Hendricks, and the other was my elementary school science teacher, Margie Heinzelman. Both of them, in addition to just being very passionate, kind people, they had kind of a gentle way of interacting with nature that just really kind of put you on the level, made you appreciate the very small, often overlooked parts of habitat.
Yeah.
And I think that just kind of, those things together had me gravitate towards invertebrates, insects specifically, just because, one, I find them fascinating, but you find them anywhere. You know, it's often said that no matter where you are in the world, you can entertain yourself if you know plants, insects, and stars.
Right.
At any time, you'll have something interesting to look at. And
yeah.
So insects just became, I like stimulus. You know, I don't like being bored. So
yeah. And you'll never
everywhere.
Get bored.
Exactly.
You can learn about a new bug every
single
day.
Exactly.
And not even scratch the surface in your lifetime.
Yes.
It's insane. It's amazing. Yeah, so you were talking about your teachers, but this is a great segue into our next question, which is who is your inspiration? Like, who have you looked up to throughout your journey, and who's kind of pushed you forward, whether you know them personally or not? Like, who inspires you?
So definitely the two people that I just mentioned, Stacia Hendricks and Margie Heinzelman, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And they were the start of the whole thing.
Right.
As I've continued, a huge, huge inspiration of mine, everyone that I've ever had is a mentor, but my master's advisor, Tripp Lamb, is just the greatest guy. I mean, just the most fantastic, wonderful, kind person. And one thing that he really embodies about nature, but really about everything in life, is that he's someone who, if he likes something, he learns about it and understands as much as he can, because he's a curious person, but also because with understanding comes a deeper appreciation of the things that
exactly.
you like.
Exactly, yeah.
So, and I, you know, no matter what you like, I encourage people to just learn more about your interests because you will like them more.
More
and
more.
There's more to like. There's more to appreciate. There's more to recognize and be curious about. He's also a fantastic photographer. And
nice.
And so not only does he appreciate nature from an intellectual perspective, but also from an aesthetic perspective, and is great at capturing and sharing that,
yeah.
which also goes beyond insects and birds and all the pretty much anything you can think of.
Yeah. Yeah, that is really awesome. I'm glad that you have those people to, like, look up to. And
oh, I'm incredibly lucky.
It's amazing, yeah. Yeah, so what are some of your other, like, interests and hobbies that you would enjoy in your spare time to kind of just get away from it all?
So this isn't necessarily getting away from
right, yeah,
from
and
insects,
we see entomology,
yes,
like, working its way
yes.
into, yeah.
But I love photography. I love particularly macro photography
nice.
of insects. It's very calming. You spend a lot of time out in nature, but sitting still and appreciating small details.
Right.
Both in determining what would make a good picture or not, and also once you take the picture, you notice all these details about these insects that you'd never be able to see
yeah.
with the naked eye.
Right.
And you just get a better idea of their behavior, their ecology, their diversity at that scale, kind of putting you on
right.
their level.
High level, yeah.
I'm also, I got a bit of this during my master's. I'm trying to continue getting more into plants and just identifying them, being familiar with their history. Another person I should mention that I really look up to is recently, now emeritus professor from ECU, Claudia Joles, who's, again, just embodies the most perfect, kind, gentle
yeah.
naturalist.
Yeah.
Very plant-like in her personality.
Yeah.
Just wonderful person. And has instilled that love of plants in me also.
Right.
So going out and just appreciating those things. I also love watching movies. And,
nice.
And, I'm a big foodie, so
nice.
I like going around trying different cuisines and all that kind of stuff.
That's great. Yeah. Yeah, that's so awesome. Yeah, so what are your big plans for the future? Are you thinking of continuing your education further and maybe some more research you want to do or trips you want to go on? What are your big goals and plans for the future?
Oh, gosh, trips I want to go on. If
yeah.
I had my pick of anything, I would spend a lot of time in Southeast Asia and the South Pacific with my camera, just
yeah.
photographing places like New Caledonia, just where there's wild, very specialized island things. Like there's a parasitic pine tree that lives there.
Wow.
Parasitic plants in general are really cool, but that's a really, really wild one.
Yeah.
I'm going to be in Thailand at the end of the month.
Oh, awesome.
Hopefully, you know, get a chance to really appreciate some
that'll
of the
be
nature
amazing.
There as well.
Yeah.
yeah. But I'm currently looking and applying for a PhD position. So
nice.
I do want to continue my education. Hopefully this pitcher plant research, but certainly something at least in that vein of plant-insect interactions
yeah.
and the ecology and evolution of those relationships. Yeah, but in terms of just getting back to that travel idea, I would
yeah.
really, there's so many places I'd love to go to. It's hard to narrow it down. With plants and insects, you can go anywhere and find something. It's the other thing I like, not to be too tangential, but again,
nope.
going back to those nature documentaries, for us in the States, you see lions, tigers, polar bears, whatever. And they're fascinating, but they're far away. You never actually see those in your day-to-day life.
Right.
And so nature and the full spectacle of nature becomes something that you see in a documentary or you see at the zoo. It's not something that you live in and are a part of.
Yeah.
But by learning more about these other organisms, I think there are great channels like Deep Look on YouTube's PBS channel that highlights this. There are fascinating stories to be told about the small things that live all around us.
Right.
And then you can go out and you see them in your backyard and you see them right around you. And I think that makes people passionate about their immediate surroundings, not just preserving the Serengeti, but also the native plants in their backyard instead of
equally as important
things.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah. Well, that's really awesome. Yeah. I love to hear that. So last thing before we wrap this up, where can we go to learn more about you and the work you're doing and maybe your macro stuff, like a social media or website or anything like that? Where can we go to learn more about you?
Yeah, so I have an Instagram account. It's at PKANN6, at PECON6. And I post a lot of macro stuff there, getting into dabbling in a little video kind of thing. I really should make a personal website. I don't have one yet, but there's a couple. I have a blog on the Nature Conservancy website that I wrote about these pitcher plant flies. The genus is Fletcheromaya. But so if you Google for that, you'll find that blog that kind of details a bit more about their life history and that kind of thing.
Amazing.
Instagram is really the main one.
Awesome. Yeah. So that's really great. It was so nice to get to know you on the podcast. This was super fun. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Well, thank you for having me. I had a wonderful time here.
Of course. Yeah, I did as well.